everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace.
I'm Manny.
And this episode is a 9-panel grid recommended reading episode. Manny and I actually have about 15, 16 titles we're going to go over rapid fire. I'm going to be talking about them real fast, but a couple items of business before we get into that. Our numbers have really been growing, so I want to thank all you listeners for that. One thing that hasn't been growing, we haven't been getting a lot of emails or feedback on Twitter about the episodes recently. So just want to encourage you all to reach out. If there's something you like about something, you know, about what we're doing, then let us know. We'd love to hear from you. Also, if there's something you'd like us to cover or a book you can recommend to us, again, we'd love to hear from you. So really want to encourage that. The next thing I want to mention. So when I was recording last night's episode or yesterday's episode, the Aftershock Monday episode, at that time, the Jeremy Dale Kickstarter was at $22,980. So it was $20 away from meeting the second stretch goal, which was the special enhancement on the cover. So some foil stamping or some spot gloss, something like that. So it's my pleasure to announce that not only did the Jeremy Dale Skyward Omnibus Kickstarter hit that second stretch goal today of $23,000 for that enhancement to the cover, it also surpassed the $26,000 level for the third stretch goal, which means we are going to get issue 10 as a standalone single issue. So I'm super excited about that. I spoke with Kelly earlier today. She is so, so excited. There are only 65 hours to go, a little over 2 days. So again, I encourage you to go and bid. There are still a couple of stretch goals possible. I think that the 28,000 is the next one, and that's every backer that ordered a tier that gets the omnibus is going to receive a special personalized bookmark and a book plate. And then if we get to 30,000, which to me right now, 65 hours seems, you know, like a crazy thing. But if we do, you all are going to get, all the backers will receive an exclusive Skyward t-shirt, just like the one that Jaden and I have, which is just amazing to be able to wear that in remembrance of Jeremy. There's never a time where I wear that shirt where I don't have somebody come up to me and talk about what a great creator Jeremy was and everything. So I encourage you, if you haven't gone and supported the Kickstarter yet, do yourself a favor. Go in and pick one of the tiers, support the Kickstarter, get the omnibus, get the single issue of issue 10, tell your friends about it. And if you need more details, I encourage you to go back and listen to the podcast Kelly and I did spotlighting the Kickstarter with all the information about how Jeremy came up with the idea and Jeremy as an artist and his love of comics and all that kind of good stuff. So it was a few weeks ago, maybe 3 weeks, 4 weeks ago now. So I encourage you to go and check that out. 65 hours left. The clock is ticking. So get out there and support the Kickstarter. All right. On to the books we're going to talk about this episode. Like I said, Manny and I are going to just kind of give you some quick overviews of things we've been reading lately, things that we are really enjoying that we recommend that you pick up. So Manny, why don't you go ahead and kick it off? What's your first book you're going to give the shout out to?
First book I'm going to give a shout out to is going to be DC's Green Arrow. Benjamin Percy with artwork by Juan Ferreira. And who's the other artist on that book?
Otto Schmidt was on there for a while.
There you go.
And also Stephen Byrne, but I think Byrne moved on to the Power Rangers JLA. I don't know if he ever came back from that. But yeah, that's a great pick, man. Love that book.
So here's what makes that pick so much better is that this week pretty much wraps up Benjamin Percy's run on the title. And, you know, us having the privilege of previewing the book, I have to say, just delivers it with a bow. It is everything that has been, all the crap that Ollie has been going through, and with the trial and his family and the city and the Justice League. I mean, just so much crap that he's had to put up with that I really appreciate the way that Vincent Percy wraps it all up. So it's now a complete story. And the image that we started with, it ends with also, but with a little difference. And I appreciated that as well. So, yeah, definitely worth picking up. There's a lot of, growth in his character from the beginning to the end. Lots of drama. We see tons of, just good character moments with Oliver Queen and growth and learning about his family's past, kind of getting over his status as a queen, kind of being more of a man of the people. And then also what I really liked about the book is just his relationship with Black Canary and how that develops and how that plays out through the series as well. So, I mean, just, I know that since the very beginning when this book came out, it was a surprise hit. I don't think even nobody really expected this book to be as popular as it was. I'm not exactly sure how the numbers are now, but solid book. And, I'm really going to miss, Percy on this title, but he's going to be doing some cool stuff.
Yeah, what's interesting is, wasn't this one of the Rebirth titles that I was like digging like early on and you were like not even reading it? And I kept telling you, dude, you got to read this book. Wasn't this one?
Yeah, that's what happened.
And so here's what's funny, right? So 38 comes out this Wednesday and you've already read it. Okay, last issue I read was 33. I'm actually 5 issues behind. I love this book and I don't know how it like fell off. I've been trying to catch up on so many things, and Green Arrow was always one of those things I was caught up on, I think. So for that reason, because I was always caught up on it, I didn't have a huge backlog to read. And so I haven't been focused on it. And yeah, and now I'm looking and I'm like, wait, what was the last issue I read? Last issue I read was 33. So I need to read 34, 35, 36, 37, 38. Oh, I'm 5 issues behind. That's crazy to me that you finished it before me. But yeah.
Yeah, it was really, really enjoyable.
Yeah, it's been a great book.
It's great to look at.
Oh, yeah. That's the other thing I was going to say. Like, all the artists on the book that we mentioned, Otto Schmidt, Juan Ferreira, Stephen Byrne, and I think there may have been somebody else in there in the mix too. But the cool thing about what all of them have done, as artists is they're like complete artists, right? So they're doing like the pencils, the inking, and the coloring. And obviously they're probably not inking it because they're probably drawing it digitally. So they're probably going straight from their digital rendering to coloring, but it's a more cohesive art style because they're drawing it digitally, knowing how the shading's going to go and everything. And so it's their vision directly onto the page. So it just makes the art a little more impactful, I think. And yeah, if I had to pick, I mean, all three of them are great, but if I had to pick one of the three who I think like is born to draw this book, it's Juan Ferreira, man. I mean, that guy, his art on this book.
Oh yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Amazing. So good. So I'm not sure, you know, you mentioned that Percy's moving on. He's actually going to be writing Nightwing. And the two guys that have been writing Gotham City Garage, can't remember. I know one of their last names is Lanzig.
Solid books, though.
Yeah. So they're going to be taking over this title. And I haven't heard who the creative team is yet. So, you know, as far as the artist goes, so I'm hoping that Ferrer is going to continue to be involved, because yeah, it's been really, really good. And let's see, it's Jackson Lansing, I think, is one. Colin Kelly, that's the name. I couldn't remember. Yeah, they're going to be taking over on Green Arrow. So I you know, those guys have been doing a great job on Gotham City Garage. They did a couple fill-in issues on Nightwing. They're pretty prolific, just based on the fact there's two of them and they seem to have a good collaboration. So I'm hoping that with the transition with Benjamin Percy going off the book, that Green Arrow continues to be a really fun title. Because, yeah, I mean, I've never been the biggest Green Arrow fan. You know, I did have a, you know, follow his run when Connor Hawke was on the book for a lot of years. But yeah, when Rebirth started, this book hit on all cylinders for me. You know, I was reading all the Rebirth titles, and it was one of the ones I was like, did surprise me, like Manny was saying. I think it took a lot of people by surprise just how good it was. So I hope it continues and keeps up at that same level of quality. All right, the first book I'm going to mention is Amazing Spider-Man, particularly the Venom Incorporated storyline that's been going on that crossed over with a couple issues of Venom, and there was also a Venom Incorporated Alpha and Omega. And honestly, part of the reason I decided to pick this up, you know, I used to have a giant, long, uninterrupted run of Spider-Man, and as much as people complain about the Clone Saga from back in the day, in the 90s, it's kind of become a cult classic in a way. But there were so many crossovers and it got so convoluted. That's when I just kind of fell off the book. And I've jumped in from time to time here or there. J. Michael Straczynski run, I've read a little bit of. And I've read quite a bit of the Dan Slott run here and there, particularly the Superior Spider-Man story. So when I heard his issue or his run was coming to an end with issue 800, I was like, you know, I should probably get on board and see what's going on with Spider-Man, you know, leading up to issue 800. You know, most recently, Marvel had almost turned, and Dan Slott had almost turned Spider-Man into a Tony Stark type. He had this giant tech company called Parker Industries, and there was like a social media app, and they were selling phones, and it was, he was Tony Stark, basically. He was Tony Stark. But, you know, it's Peter Parker, so nothing can ever go right. And it all came crashing down for one reason or another. So I decided, let me jump on and see what's going on leading up to issue 800. So I think I picked it up with 988 or 989. And it was pretty enjoyable. And then it went into this crossover with Venom. And, the you know, recently Flash Thompson had the Venom suit, and then Eddie Brock shows back up and he's going to have the Venom suit. And then we see another guy, Lee, I can't remember his last name, Lee Pierce or Price, one of those two. He had the Venom suit and it had left him. And so he goes, and, you know, maybe you didn't know this, but the Venom suit had has a lot of different offspring, including one called Mania that operates as a superhero in Pennsylvania. So this Lee Price guy goes and hunts that down because he still wants the Venom suit, and Mania acts differently. And anyway, it's just this big convoluted thing, probably a way to get from the end of Secret Wars, where Flash Thompson had the suit and was actually... was actually Venom Space Knight. And then, you know, most recently Eddie Brock gets it back, and then there's a fight, then Flash Thompson ends up as the new anti-Venom, and Mania is still going on. And there's just all these moving pieces. There's all these moving pieces with Venom. So I'm not sure. I mean, the story Venom Incorporated doesn't necessarily, it cleans it up a little bit. It doesn't clean it up a whole lot. I'm kind of the opinion as a Spider-Man fan that Venom himself is enough. I don't think you can kind of, you know, put the Jack-in-the-Box back in the Jack-in-the-Box, I guess you'd say, or you know, or unring the bell, I guess you'd say. You know, the cat's already out of the bag, so to speak. I don't think you can roll back and just have the one Venom. I think Venom's a great character, but I think they took it too far. You know, first it was Venom, and then the Carnage, and then the more symbiotes, and more symbiotes, and more. You know, I think Venom is enough. You could even say Venom and Carnage is enough. But they've come out with Mania and all these other things. So they tried to clean it up a little bit, and I think they kind of succeeded. They did succeed in giving, you know, Flash Thompson a heroic role again. And, you know, the suit's back with Eddie Brock. And, you know, I guess it all kind of makes sense when you think about it. The Venom movie's coming out. So I don't know that I necessarily recommend the Venom Inc. storyline. It wasn't like great. It wasn't terrible, but it wasn't like it didn't blow me away. But the Amazing Spider-Man title itself is really good. And again, with a lot of things that are going on leading up to 800 with Osborn, that's where you're going to want to pay attention. It's Norman Osborn. You know, in some form or another, the Green Goblin's going to come back. Such a classic Spider-Man villain, maybe the classic Spider-Man villain. So with that coming up, I want to be a part of it. It's Dan Slott's last hurrah, so you know he's going to want to go out with a bang. So I do recommend picking up Amazing Spider-Man. And I'm not the only one that's been picking it up recently, because they've been selling out and going to second printings for like the last three or four issues. So if you do want to get on board, get to your comic shop early, tell them to save you a copy. There's a lot of people that are going to be on board as it creeps up to 800. And I'd be remiss if I didn't mention that Ryan Stegman, the artist on the series, has been doing an incredible job. In a way, sometimes his art looks like completely like he's channeling Todd McFarlane, which for a lot of people is the end-all be-all of Spider-Man artists. It's not always as clean as McFarlane's art, and his storytelling isn't quite as slick, but it's very much enjoyable art, and it's been a really, really great story lately. So yeah, back on board the Spider-Man bandwagon, definitely. All right, what do you have up next, Manny?
From Aftershock, I have one of my favorite series, which is Rough Riders, which is on its third arc. So there's Rough Riders, and there was the second the second arc of it.
Riders of the Storm. Riders of the Storm.
Yeah, Riders of the Storm. And then now the third arc has started. Last week was issue one. I think it's Ride or Die.
Yep.
And it's still the same consistent creative team, which is Adam Glass and Patrick Polis. And just kind of like your, I'm a sucker for this type of book, just historical figures from American history. You have Theodore Roosevelt before he's president, and actually now as he's president, who takes on a group of personalities, I guess you could say, from those days, and puts together a team. The team is comprised of Thomas Edison, Houdini, you have Jack Johnstone, you have
Annie Oakley.
Annie Oakley and
Monk Eastman.
There's one other gangster that
Monk Eastman, I think, is who you're forgetting.
Thank you. Monk Eastman is the other one. So they each obviously have their own attributes. Like Annie, she's great with guns. Houdini can get out of locks and whatever. Playing card, he's really good playing cards. Obviously, Jack's a great fighter. And, you know, so with all their, and then obviously Edison with his inventions, they all come together to in the first arc, they're fighting aliens and alien weapons. The second arc actually becomes a little bit more of what I thought the series was going to be originally, which was more of taking down, a conspirator, trying to take over the United States. I actually enjoyed, even though I really liked the first arc, just because of the premise of the book and the team, I really enjoyed the second arc more, just because it's what I really thought that the book was going to be overall. And now the third arc, now they're going into the supernatural. So I do appreciate Adam Glass's willingness to kind of take it to different areas and different subject matter and see how the characters interacted with that type of problem. So aliens, conspirators, and now the supernatural. So it's a really good series. I highly recommend it. I'm glad to see that it's still going. It's one of my favorite Aftershock titles.
Yeah, and we're going to have to do an Aftershock episode about that at some point. But I completely agree with you. I think the second arc was better than the first arc for me, just because the first arc for me felt a little uneven, because the way it started out was like so good. And then all of a sudden, I think issue three, all of a sudden it's like, oh, wait, aliens. And it just felt off, because the first three were so grounded.
Yeah, I
Whereas,
agree.
Whereas the second series was like, it was more even all the way through.
Definitely. Just like I said, I think it was just because of, anticipating that it was going to be more like the second arc. And then you kind of get this curveball with the aliens and with some of the technology and some of the things that happened. It's kind of like, oh, all right, just a little bit more, maybe, advice than I expected. But, that's kind of where I see where it was uneven.
What are you thinking about the third arc with it being supernatural? I feel like it's more in tone so far. I mean, it's only one issue, but in tone so far, it definitely feels more like the second arc, where it's a little more grounded. And for whatever reason, I guess I can believe like spiritual demons and monsters more than I can believe aliens, apparently.
Well, the thing is that I kind of also keep an open mind that, you know, maybe it's actually not even anything supernatural. Maybe this is something that in the end turns out to be one of those like Scooby-Doo stories where it was somebody behind it the entire time. So I'm not necessarily judging it yet. We'll see how it unfolds. Kind of like, I don't want it to take this like huge left turn where it's like all supernatural and it just doesn't make sense anymore. Kind of giving it that uneven feeling like the first arc did. But yeah, I agree with you. It just seems, after everything they've been through, it just seems a little bit more grounded, even though it is supernatural.
Yeah, definitely. All right, next book I want to mention. Now, I did talk about this last Wednesday for my New Comics Wednesday episode, but Maddie didn't get a chance to talk on it because he didn't get a chance to join me. And it's so good that I just had to mention it again, and that's the Terrifics. So Jeff Lemire, Yvonne Reese, Joe Prado. I mean, wow. I mean, what else can I say about this book? It was so enjoyable. Plastic Man literally had me laughing out loud. The art by Yvonne Reese was outstanding. Everything I would want from a Fantastic Four book. I mean, everything I would want from a comic and more. It was so fun. It was a great start. I love the fact that they're introducing a ancestor of Phantom Girl from Legion of Superheroes. Legion of Superheroes, you know, for listeners of the podcast, they'll know one of my favorite superhero groups, one of the first comics I collected. You know, they were one of my picks for top five heroes you've never heard of. So the fact that we're getting an ancestor of hers, the fact that I'm getting Plastic Man, the fact that I'm getting Mr. Terrific, that's all great. I'm not a giant fan of Metamorpho. He's okay to me. I don't dislike him. I guess, you know, I've read quite a bit of him back in the day. He was a member of Batman and the Outsiders, rather. And I think that series lasted for 32 issues, if not a little bit longer. And I read all those, but I don't know. He just never really made much of an impression on me. So, you know, I don't have a problem with him necessarily. And I'm curious to see what Lemire can do with him. Maybe he can make him stand out more. But just based on the fact that Lemire's got such a great take on Plastic Man and the art by Yvonne Reese, just those two things, Lemire writing Plastic Man, Yvonne Reese on art, I'd be in. It's so, so good. It was just, I mean, literally I was laughing out loud several times while I was reading it about some of Plastic Man's dialogue and his antics and everything. So yeah, I love it. I love that it's spinning out of DC Metal, you know, Dark Knight's Metal, that event. I think I've read in several places that more so than any other of the New Age of Heroes books, this is the one that ties in most closely with Dark Knight's Metal. probably followed by Challengers of the Unknown. So I like that. I like it when DC does a big event and there's actually like consequences and things that come out of it. So yeah, absolutely love this book. And I want to hear your take on it, Manny.
Just a lot of plastic, man, in your face, which is what I think a lot of people wanted to see out of this book more than anything, just because of, you know, he's been gone for so long, but it's kind of also that comedy factor that you talk about. I mean, everything from like belting everybody out of his mouth when he had to protect them, when he just really, really good stuff overall. I really enjoyed it. The art by Ivan Reis is just so, so good. I gotta say also, that I also really enjoyed the colors of the book, which was by Marcelo Maiolo. It was colored very, very well, and it was just overall just a harmony of a great creative team. Just really good setup. Didn't really try to do too much, and then just really good to look at. And then just some of the expressions that that Reese is able to give to Plastic Man, just really good stuff. you're right. It's a really, really funny book because of Plastic Man. And I just cannot wait I almost kind of, to be honest with you, kind of want to wait to almost read it in trade, just because it just seems like the kind of story that I just want all at once, not have to wait every week for. So, really enjoyed it. And of course, being that Lemire is one of my favorite writers, he's obviously on Bloodshot. So, I cannot wait for the next one.
Yeah, and I'm glad that we're mentioning it here. You know, being that it just came out last week, you may still be able to find a copy on the shelf at your local comic shop, or get out there today, or when you go in to pick up your new books tomorrow, see if you can pick up a copy. Because you definitely don't want to fall behind. Because I have a feeling that, you know, a couple issues down the line, this book's really gonna catch fire if it hasn't already, and then it's gonna be hard to go back and find those first few issues. And the other thing I want to mention that Manny said was Marcelo Maiolo. You know, he was my best colorist a couple years ago for the work he did with Bernard Chang. Him and Bernard worked together quite a bit. He's spectacular. And I definitely echo what Manny said about his color work. It's really outstanding. All right. I think you're up next, Manny. What do you have for your third book?
This one kind of caught me off guard because I really wasn't reading it. And to be honest with you, I'm not really sure why I started reading it. This was one that I picked up 18 issues in, so I just kind of binge read it one in weekend and then have been caught up ever since. And I'm talking about Red Hood and the Outlaws by Scott Lobdell, with art by Dexter Soy. It follows still the Red Hood, not with his team of like Arsenal and Starfire. This one actually he ends up teaming up with Artemis, an Amazon, and Bizarro, as strangely as that might seem. But it's really good. So they end up, trying to go after this Artemis and the Red Hood end up going after the same package. And it turns out that they're looking for, Bizarro. He's the weapon that people are trying to get. And within that whole mix, they kind of end up getting a little bit of respect for each other and getting feeling sympathetic towards Bizarro and the way he's treated and in a really petty way, Lex Luthor ends up granting them the right to Bizarro. But with all that, he kind of messes with his head and ends up making him super smart, to the point where Bizarro creates an entire, command center for them in the middle of the city that nobody can see. And, he ends up creating portals so that they can pretty much enter wherever they want by just going through a door. And, so it's been a really interesting, series, just because, both Red Hood and Artemis don't they care for him, and at the same time are really worried about him because his intellect seems to be kind of taking over, and they felt like they were being excluded. And at the same time, Bizarro feels the same way that Red Hood and Artemis are excluding him. And so it's a little bit of a back and forth. And I just think it's been a really good series. Nothing too outlandish, and just really enjoyable.
Yeah, that's another one of the Rebirth titles that I fell off early. Not for any other reason other than it's just hard to keep up with everything. You know, I'm a fan of Scott Lobdell. I think I read the first 5 issues, and just hearing you talk about it makes me want to catch up. Like a super intelligent Bizarro, like that just sounds really cool. Like I'm ready. And Dexter's always art. I loved it right from the beginning. And the other thing I really loved about the book, maybe my favorite thing about the book, and you can tell me if this continued through it, the first 5 issues, they're all like narrated by Jason Todd, by Red Hood. Does that continue through the whole series?
Yeah, that still continues through.
Yeah, definitely. I love that, the way that Jason's Red Hood's like point of view kind of steer, like that's the framework for the story. I really enjoy that. So yeah, I'm definitely gonna have to get caught up on that for sure. All right, next up for me is Action Comics. Again, this is, well, I'm going to mention it because it's leading up to 1000, but you know, this is a title that from the beginning of Rebirth with Dan Jurgens on it, it's been absolutely spectacular. And most recently, Superman's been teamed up with Booster Gold. So, you know, Dan Jurgens is the creator of Booster Gold. Dan Jurgens is kind of my Superman guy because, you know, he wrote Superman for many, many years in the 90s, the Triangle era of Superman, which was kind of, you know, in my wheelhouse. So you got Dan Jurgens, my Superman guy. You got Booster Gold, who he created. You got him teamed up. You got him in Action Comics, which has been great right from the beginning. You think it's a home run, right? Well, I'm going to give it a triple. It wasn't quite as good as it could have been. It was enjoyable for sure, but I just feel like it just, the storyline just lasted a little too long. It just overstayed its welcome just a little bit. So the Booster Shot storyline was about Superman discovering that Mr. Oz, this mysterious figure that's been around since the New 52, claimed to be his father from, you know, pre-crisis and escaping the destruction of Krypton. And Superman wanted to travel back in time to the moment Krypton was destroyed to see if Jor-El really escaped the destruction of it. So he travels back in time. Booster goes to stop him because, you know, Booster's role as kind of a time cop kind of thing, you know, working for the Time Lords and policing time so nothing could be changed. He goes back there, pulls Superman out, says, hey, you can't be here. You might be tempted to change things. They end up in a, you know, possible alternate present, possible alternate future. Like, it goes sideways in many different ways. And there are moments in the story which are really great. Moments both with Superman and Booster interacting. You know, Superman was one of the heroes that actually inspired Booster in the future to become a hero. So there's moments like that. A lot of the series or the arc is narrated from Booster Gold's point of view, so that's really great. And then the final issue is also really great because it sets up something that we could see some serious ramifications from in the future, but it also shows just how much Booster Gold looks up to Superman and is inspired by him, that he's willing to step over the line in a way without Superman even realizing the change that's made. So that was really cool. But yeah, I just feel like it dragged just a little bit. And again, I mean, it's been probably since the very beginning of Rebirth that Manny and I talked about this. But when Rebirth first launched, we talked about some of these books being, you know, bi-weekly, coming out every 2 weeks rather than monthly, and how we felt that because of that, like, creators might cheat a little bit. Like, you were really only getting 1.5 issues worth of story just because they were having to churn it out so fast that maybe things weren't progressing quite as fast as they would. You remember when we talked about that, Manny?
Yeah, I remember, because we talked about that that fight in the beginning, the Doomsday fight. It just seemed to just go on and on and on. And yeah, we talked about the way that, you know, this is probably something that if it was monthly, it wouldn't have felt that long, because those two issues probably would have been condensed into one.
Yeah. I think the Doomsday storyline ended up going like 6 issues, and we felt in those 6 issues, you really only got like 4 issues worth of content. So if it wasn't coming out every other week, it probably would have only been 4 issues, and it would have been over sooner. It just, you know, I think you can't help but kind of pad it as a creator if it's coming out every other week, just because, you know, you want to make sure the trains keep running on time. And you feel like, I have plenty of room. I can push that back a little bit because I have plenty of story and page space because it comes out every other week. So again, this is the first time I felt like this with Action Comics since that first arc, since that Doomsday arc. So and I am disappointed that Dan Jurgens is going off the book, is leaving the book, just because I think that he's done such an incredible job. I'm excited for Brian Michael Bendis. So in a way, it's kind of bittersweet. But at the same time, I feel like, I don't know, there's things that I worry about in the Superman continuity with Bendis coming on. If he changes some certain things, I may just lose it, actually. And I'll talk about that with one of the books I'm going to talk about down the line. So what do you have next, Manny?
Next I have, on my list? I keep losing my list. Green Lantern, written by, the first few issues were written by, Sam Humphries, and recently, or currently, the series is written by Tim Seeley. The series started off strong for me, just because, there was a lot of, with also Hal Jordan having his own title, Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern, a lot of questions whether this team up was going to work. And, you and I have talked about it many times that it has worked beautifully. They just play off each other really, really well. Jessica Cruz obviously has a lot of, personal issues, a lot of self-confidence issues, panic attacks, just an array of emotional problems that she has to fight every day. Meanwhile, her partner, Simon Baz, also has a lot going for him, for a good part of the first arc. He's still carrying a gun with him, kind of as his backup, because he doesn't even trust himself with the ring. He doesn't feel like he deserves it. They have to kind of put their differences aside, because they have one lantern to share between them, and it can only be summoned by both of them together. So they have to quickly learn how to work together, because right off the bat, they gotta go up against the Red Lantern. So that was interesting. Then also we got a new ability that Simon Baz has, which is Emerald Sight. I mean, he was able to pretty much cure Red Lantern of being a Red Lantern, because we know well that once you turn into a Green Lantern, a Red Lantern, there's no way of going back. The one spot that I was not necessarily too happy was, it seemed that when Tim Seeley took over, it seemed like a lot of the missions ended up back in space, and that kind of bummed me out a little bit. I really liked the more personal touch that the characters were getting back at home, whether it was Simon Baz at home dealing with his family, or Jessica. I mean, just from one moment to another, there was one specific issue that I really loved. Where she's fine all day. I mean, just killing it with the league, taking down bad guys, and then one particular villain. Well, not necessarily even a villain, just a criminal. Just has the right combination of words that just sets her off and puts her right back into that depressed state that is all too common nowadays. And I thought that Sam Humphries hit that right in the nail, because I've seen it with friends and family before, and it's something that doesn't necessarily get too much attention. And I always thought that having a superhero that is not only fighting crime, fighting for justice, but also fighting themselves and making sure that they understand that they have what it takes to do whatever they want, which includes being a superhero, and it's a fight every day, and just a really good book. Still right now, even with Tim Seeley kind of still up in space right now, I still recommend it. Great teamwork between the two, and we'll see what it happens going forward.
Yeah, I think that both Sam Humphries and Tim Seeley have nailed the relationship between Simon and Jessica. That they seem like brother and sister, you know, partners. To me, that's what makes the book, the relationship between the two of them. Yeah, and both Humphries and Seeley have that down cold. So it's a good title, definitely. Next book I'm going to mention that I read recently is actually an event. It's the 4001 AD event from Valiant, standalone miniseries, 4 issues. But it also crossed over. There were 4 different one-shots. There was 4000 AD Bloodshot, 4001 AD Exo Manowar, 4001 AD Shadow Man, and 4001 AD War Mother. And then there were also several issues of the Rye series that tied in with that from Valiant. And you know, I didn't hear a whole lot about this when it came out. Like, I heard a lot leading up to it. But then when the actual event came out, I didn't hear a lot about it. So, and I'm kind of surprised because it was really, really good. Clayton Crane art for the most part throughout the miniseries. So painted art, absolutely beautiful to look at. Really, really cool. I really enjoyed the book. The tie-ins are certainly not essential to reading the story as far as the one-shots go. You definitely, I think, get a lot more out of reading the Rye tie-ins. So I definitely recommend reading those tie-ins. Read the main series. Of the one-shots, I think that War Mother was the best of the 4, but it was a super, super enjoyable read, and I think you can pick up the whole 4001 story in a trade paperback that came out just a few weeks ago. I talked about it on the Valiant Sunday episode a couple weeks ago, so I definitely recommend going and picking up that trade paperback. I'm sure you can still find it in your comic shops because it was really, really enjoyable. Did you ever read that event, Manny?
I started to, but I really lost interest. I read some of the one shots that came out for the specific characters, and I think I got through half of it, and then I don't know, I can't really even tell you why I fell off of it.
Yeah, it was so good. I can't believe you didn't finish. All right, what do you have up next?
Up next is a book that I never get tired of talking about, and I am not going to apologize to listeners if they're sick of me talking about it, but my next book is Tom King's and Mr. Miracle, just because I still think everybody should be reading that book that I never got tired of promoting before it came out, and now that it's out, I still not tired of promoting it, just because we talked about it before. He's one of my favorite obscure characters. Obviously, he's a Kirby creation, and just spectacular storytelling and just so easy to read, so much depth into it also, and just so much to get in that you can get into. We have an entire episode dedicated to it. You can probably go back a couple of episodes. We did a spotlight on Mr. Miracle up to issue 6. And it just completely, the way Tom King was able to, what he did for Vision, he's doing for Mr. Miracle now. And the way he understands the characters, the history of some of his adversaries, and the relationship between Varda, it's just spot on, an amazing title. And then you add Gerard's artwork, where he just nails some expressions, where his panel layouts are sometimes the motion flows from one to another, and it's just done so beautifully. So overall, it's just such a great book, and every month it comes out, it's just first thing I need to look at. Not gonna say too much more about it, because you can probably go back and listen to another episode and hear us talk about it a whole lot more.
Yeah, definitely. We've kind of beat that horse to death. Next book I'm going to mention, Larry Hama and a variety of artists, so many that I don't want to mention anyone, because then I'm going to be excluding someone else. But it's G.I. Joe from IDW. I've been talking about how they have a new Snake Eyes, a female Snake Eyes, a young Snake Eyes. And that's been the main focus of the book, but it's been really enjoyable. It's been very nostalgic. Coming up is issue 250, which is going to be an anniversary issue, and it's going to kind of culminate with that Snake Eyes storyline that's been going on. Just like Amazing Spider-Man, a lot of the recent issues of G.I. Joe have been selling out and going to multiple printings. So you may have a tough time tracking down first printings, but you probably can find second and even third printings at your local comic shop. Definitely want to be in there for issue 250. It's going to be action-packed and double-sized and have a lot of good information. And if you want to hang on going forward, issues 251, 252, 53, 54, 55, and 56 are all going to be standalone issues with a G.I. Joe Special Missions kind of label, I guess you'd say. And for those not familiar, G.I. Joe Special Missions was the second G.I. Joe title that Marvel came out with in the late 80s when they had the G.I. Joe license, and it was a little more hardcore, a little more mature. But what's important to note as far as the G.I. Joe Special Mission issues coming out from IDW is they're going to be all standalone issues. I think Larry Hama is going to try to kind of give all the different characters some character moments throughout those 6 issues. So if you read those 6, you'll kind of be familiar with all the current members of the Joe team. And it's just it's a fun read. It's very much escapism. It doesn't get too political, which I enjoy about it. It'd be really easy to have that book fall into some diatribe and comment on, you know, our current political state here in the United States. But it very much stays in that fantastical G.I. Joe world, and it's been really enjoyable lately. So I've been getting caught up on it most recently, and I definitely recommend it. All right, what do you have next, Manny?
My next title is kind of weird, and to be honest with you, I still don't know what to make of it. It's on the second issue. Image is Ice Cream Man, written by W. Maxwell Prince with art by Martin Morazzo. It's like every issue is its own story. And what it has in common is this Ice Cream Man, who's kind of not necessarily a storyteller, but he just plays a role in the story that kind of completes the story, and just really, really good, really weird, which is kind of what I was hoping it would be. And so the first story, I don't even know how to describe it. It's a kid who somehow befriends a deadly tarantula, and who kills his parents. And he goes home and he plugs his nose, goes to the kitchen to talk to his folks. Next panel, you notice, his parents are dead. They've been dead, but he just kind of keeps living life as if they were alive. And it is really weird like that. And not going to say too much more for it because I think it's worth reading. Second book, it follows two drug addicts and just how they really ruined their lives and how they went from outgoing and just your almost normal folks to just to stealing, to selling everything they have, to just laying lifeless on the couch and just a range of stories that I think you're getting in this book is going to be quite a lot. So I really enjoyed it. It's weird. I just hope that they can kind of keep it up. And I'm not really sure what to expect. I guess that's another thing I really like about it. I'm not sure what to expect next from it. The artwork is, I'm not too, too fond of it. It reminds me a lot of the artwork that I used to see in Clone. I like the book enough that I can overlook that.
It's all by one writer. I thought it was more of a, like an anthology.
I gotta look it up again, but I think the first two issues were by the same person.
Yeah, I mean, very well, maybe. I mean, I remember reading the solicit for the first one and thinking, okay, so it's a bunch of really, really weird stories with an ice cream man as like the thing that ties in. Like, I don't know, for whatever reason, it just kind of turned me off. I never checked it out. So, let me know about that. Next book I want to mention is Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps, written by my writer of the year for 2017, Robert Venditti. Man, do I love this book. It is so amazing. It's cosmic. It's epic. It's Hal Jordan as the star, but yet you've got Jon Stewart. You got Kyle Rayner. You got Guy Gardner. You got the Guardians. You've got Kilowog. I mean, all the Lanterns are there. It's all the Green Lantern goodness, except for Simon and Jessica, who do show up from time to time. But it's Red Lanterns. It's Green Lantern, New Guardians. It's Green Lantern Corps. It's Hal Jordan, all wrapped into one. It's been really, really spectacular. We've had the Controllers show up lately. We've had the Dark Stars show up lately. It did a crazy crossover between the Action Comics arc and run that I just talked about earlier in the episode. It did a crossover with that when Booster Gold and Superman were in the future. On a planet taken over by Zod, we saw the Green Lanterns at that planet when Zod first arrives and starts to take over. So it was kind of this weird coronal crossover kind of thing. And it's just been, it's been spectacular. The latest issue had an amazing, actually, I take that back. It's the issue that came out a couple weeks ago. The new issue, I think 38, comes out this Wednesday. So in 37, there was a really cool moment where Hal Jordan's able to do something with his ring that you wouldn't normally be able to do with a Green Lantern ring. But because Hal created that ring himself out of his own willpower, and it's basically a part of him, which we're going back like before Rebirth. We're going back, before the series started, before the DC Green Lantern Rebirth one shot, back to the new 52 run of Green Lantern when Venditti had Hal as kind of the rogue, the Hal Jordan fugitive kind of storyline. I mean, that's what we're going back to the roots of this story. And then in the one shot, seeing him forge a ring from his own willpower and the consequences of that we saw play out in the early issues of the series. So I'm curious, next time I see Rob, I'm going to have to ask him, okay, so did you do all that? Did you have that whole idea and then know that you were going to have this incredible like character moment with Hal and the ring and the Eradicator? I mean, you could, I'm reading the issue. I'm reading 37 and I see it coming and I'm just getting excited. I'm just getting excited because I know what's going to happen. And then sure enough, it goes down and Ethan Van Sciver renders it beautifully. And it's, you know, I'm not going to give it away because it's an incredible moment. It was like, yeah, that is awesome. That's so cool. Such a great comic image, such a great concept. And yeah, I'm loving Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps right now. It's so good. Did you happen to read 37, Manny? Do you know the moment I'm talking about?
Nope, because I'm behind on Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern.
Okay, well, when you get to it, you're gonna know exactly what the moment I'm talking about, exactly the panel I'm talking about, and you're gonna go, yeah, that's freaking cool.
You know, the one thing that a couple of friends and I were talking about, Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern, is one of our favorite aspects early on of that book is Guy Gardner. Holy crap, that guy just he was being tortured by Sinestro and his corps, and he was just blabbing away, just classic Guy Gardner. It made for some really funny moments. And then afterwards, when they're going after a couple of the renegade lanterns, probably one of my favorite guy moments ever is he's so cocky and he hates this yellow lantern so much. I can't remember his name off the top of my head.
Arkillo? Arkillo?
Yeah. He hates him so much that he's like, you know what? Screw these damn rings. You and I, right now, let's go. No rings. And they just beat the hell out of each other. Just so good. And soon after, that's where I fell off. But, I mean, it really makes me want Guy to have his own book again, because if he can be written like that, you know, that's I want more of that.
Yeah, you know, I'm not the biggest Guy Gardner fan in the world, for sure. You know, at different times, I very much have disliked the character. He's just been super annoying, which I suppose is the point. But I'll say this. You know, I used to give V. Diddy a bad time about not liking Hal Jordan because he just was putting Hal through his paces, man. He was just, you know, beating him down with one terrible thing after another, and Hal could never even catch his breath. You know, compared to how V. Diddy treats Guy Gardner, he's in love with Hal Jordan because, man, you are right. Like, when Sinestro's torturing him, and then especially when Gardner and Arkillo fight, it's just like, I'm like cringing. I'm like doing the sphincter pucker because it's just brutal. How, like, Guy Gardner gets his butt. Like, how can the guy even be conscious? I mean, say what you want about Guy Gardner, but the guy can take a beating for sure. All right, that's enough about Guy Gardner getting the beat down. What do you have next, Manny?
My other favorite book, Bloodshot Salvation by Jeff Lemire. At this point, it's almost like I have a relationship with this book just because of how much history we have. Ever since the Valiant relaunch, that, you know, we got the more Terminator type Bloodshot, and then through what happened in the Valiant with Geomancer, he was able to just kind of be a person for a while in Jay Garrick, and then I'm sorry, Ray Garrison. Where did I get Jay Garrick from? Oh, that's it. Okay, never mind. That's Speedster. Ray Garrison, sorry. And then, you know, he has to accept his role as Bloodshot. And then we saw him in the future. And then we saw him on Bloodshot Island, Bloodshot USA. You guys have been through a lot. And Jeff Lemire has very, very carefully plotted this entire trip through his life out, where now he's reached a point where he's married with magic, has a kid, and now has to deal with that. Has had to deal with magic's dad, and now even has to go into the future to try to save his daughter. Really, really solid book. Just, I mean, you can see the scope of work. You can see that this isn't something that just got thrown together. It's getting thrown together arc by arc. This is something that has been planned out for a long time and still is to the day. I mean, I think that from when Bloodshot Salvation was announced, we found out that, hey, this is the scope of work that's already been put into it, and it's 20 something issues into it. So that's something that I really can appreciate from a writer, having the confidence to be able to plan out a book for that long, knowing that, sometimes, you know, the climate out there for comics is really, really difficult, but not for a story like this. And it's something that I will always support, especially with the quality of writing and artwork that goes into it. Why I always recommend Bloodshot Salvation, or just the Bloodshot line in general, because it's such a good way of journeying through the life of a character. It's not your typical villain of the week or villain of the year, or villain of the month, whatever you want to call it, that he just overcomes. He's overcoming being Bloodshot and then just life in general. And I really enjoy that.
Have you read issue 7 yet?
No, I have not.
Yeah, I because I agree with everything you said. I think Bloodshot's been an incredible book. I did see a few people complaining about 7, saying, "Hey, man, I'm still paying $4 for the issue, and it's all there's no art basically. It all takes place like Bloodshot's blind, and it all takes place through his point of view. So you're basically just looking at black pages." So I haven't read it myself yet. I'm curious to know how it reads. I can kind of see their point, but, sometimes it's nice to experiment. And in my mind, Jeff Lemire has earned my trust.
Oh, yeah, of course.
He's earned the right to do a little experimentation. So I'm sure we'll talk more about Bloodshot Salvation probably on the New Comics Wednesday episode that comes out tomorrow. So next book I want to mention – again, just like Terrifics, only one issue's come out. Again, this one that I covered on that particular Wednesday that it came out. It's from Liam Sharp. He both wrote and illustrated it. And again, something I'm mentioning because I want to know Manny's thoughts. I haven't had a chance to talk about it yet. And it's Batman Brave and the Bold. I'll talk about the art first. It's Liam Sharp. It's Liam Sharp doing Wonder Woman and Batman and these Greek gods. And it transcends comic art. It becomes fine art. In my mind, Liam Sharp is one of the top three artists working in the medium today. I don't know why more people don't know who he is. I don't know why more people don't realize how spectacular his art is. I mean, and he's the nicest guy. He's so grateful for his second go-around with comics. You know, he was got pretty big back in the 90s. Death's Head and some other things from Marvel. And then the work kind of dried up and he did some other things, established a publishing company. Then he created a digital comics company, Madefire, that they do kind of motion comics. And there's just various things that he got involved in. And then he had a chance to do Wonder Woman and with Rebirth, and he knocked it out of the park. Again, it's just looking at his art. It transcends comic art. It's fine art. And now that he's getting to tell his story about Batman and Wonder Woman together, Batman Brave and the Bold, new iteration. The first issue was amazing. I love the dialogue and kind of the language he uses for the gods that speak. It feels period appropriate, and it's very grandiose. And I don't know, I think some people kind of felt it was indulgent, but I thought it was perfect. And, I loved the pacing of the first issue. And I think that when all is said and done, I think it's a 6-issue miniseries. I think it's going to be a classic. I think the trade will probably do very, very well. Of course, I'm not going to wait for the trade. I've got to read every issue as it happens, as it comes out. And the first issue blew me away. It was so good, especially because I had seen some, I read it early, but I'd seen some even previous reviews of it like a few weeks before it came out, People got advance, I guess, copies. And I just didn't see where they were coming from. I did not agree with their assessment at all. The story was incredible. Art was incredible. Didn't feel it was indulgent. Didn't feel it was slow or dull or boring at all. It was amazing in my mind. So did you get a chance to read it, Manny?
No, I haven't got a chance to take a look at it yet.
Oh, man, you definitely, that's got to be, like, before you read any other comics, you need to read that next for sure. All right, what do you have? Okay. What do you have next you want to talk about?
I'm going to talk about Black Lightning, Cold Dead Hands. This is a 6-issue mini series by creator of Black Lightning, Tony Isabella, with awesome artwork by Clayton Henry. And it picks up, it's a little bit, if you're enjoying the TV show, which I really am, I highly recommend CW's Black Lightning, because it is not like it's not like the other shows right now on the CW, where they're kind of villain of the week. Flash does that a lot, which is, don't get me wrong, there's nothing wrong with it. Legends does that too, and Google kind of does it. They kind of try to do a little bit more storytelling, but I don't know, it's kind of off for me. Black Lightning is a lot more in touch with real world problems. This is something that a lot of the things going on in the TV show are issues that you can probably, a lot of people are experiencing right now, actually not probably, things that are happening, social injustices, issues with communication with police, how to teach children in schools and kind of not having them back in the streets and making wrong decisions, etc. Point is, this book is a little bit different than that. Although I will say that they do, Tony Isabella does kind of give you a good spoonful of social mistrust between people and authority. And I think that maybe he overdid it just a little bit, because it's kind of in your face for a little too long. Like I get it. It's there, and you know, right, with the many tragedies that has happened lately, that have been reported lately, better to say that way, I understand why you would want to kind of touch on that issue. Black Lightning is dealing with kind of alien tech that's getting out into the street. And it has the same antagonist, Tobias Whale, who's just looking to make money off of having these weapons in the street. His plan is, criminals having alien tech, then, police officers going to need alien technology, alien guns as well. And so is the military, and so is so-and-so. And that way, through his connections to his company, he's going to end up being the supplier and, obviously make tons and tons of money off of it. But of course, Black Lightning, being the social justice hero that he is out in front, trying to stop this. And then, so it handles storytelling that way of a kid getting a hold of it and what happens there. And issue 5 actually comes out this week. And that's actually a really good issue, because it's Black Lightning and Tobias Whale finally, going head to head and, quite the ass kicking on both sides. So, it's a good book. It's a good miniseries, and I recommend it.
All right. Next up, I want to mention kind of 3 books in 1, I guess, just because they all kind of live in the same world. So Tithe Samaritan. The book started out as Tithe, and then Matt Hawkins changed it to Samaritan. But it also crosses over with Postal, which those 2 books live in the Think Tank universe, that kind of Edenverse that Top Cow called it. So huge Think Tank fan, one of my favorite books of all time. Definitely always been caught up on that. read Postal when it first came out. And then again, like a lot of the books, it just, not that it fell off my radar, I was still purchasing it, but it just wasn't at the top of the stack and other things took priority, mostly for, you know, having to record the podcast. And then Tithe came out and I read that and I loved the first two arcs, but never read the third arc when it switched over to Samaritan, and then never read Eden's Fall when it crossed over with three. But I've been trying to get caught up on it lately. Postal's one of Manny's favorite books. He's always getting on me for not being caught up with it. And so I've been reading it lately, and man, Manny's right. Shame on me that I did not keep up with this book as it was coming out. But as a bonus, Manny has read the entire thing and has nothing left to look forward to until like 2019 when Top Cow brings Postal back. But I still have Postal issues that I haven't read that I get to read and enjoy for the first time. But we're definitely gonna go ahead.
Not true. I have one left.
Do you?
Yeah, we have one more special
into. I'm just talking about the Postal series itself. Yes, because I still have that too. I still have the Postal Mark and the what's the last one that he's? It's Postal. His mom, right?
It's his mom, and that I'm really looking forward to that because I got a lot of questions that
I did flip to the last issue because we talked about it when it came out. So yeah, I kind of know a little more than I wish I did, but. I guarantee we will be doing a spotlight on Postal and maybe Samaritan Tithe, but definitely Postal coming up real soon. I'm thinking maybe for the 250th episode of the podcast, we'll do a special on Postal. So definitely looking forward to that. And then I think Manny's done. So I have one more thing I want to mention, and it's Super Sons, Sons of Tomorrow crossover, which was Peter J. Tomasi, Patrick Gleason. Patrick Gleason was on some of the art. Tyler Kirkham was on some of the art. Francis J. Manapul did a lot of the covers, which were amazing. And so what was great about this series is it was in the Superman title, which Tomasi and Gleason write, and it was in the Super Sons title, which Tomasi and Gleason write. Oh, and Jorge Jimenez does the art for that, and that was spectacular as well. But it also crossed over into the Titans book, the Teen Titans book, which normally Benjamin Percy writes. We talked about his spectacular work on Green Arrow earlier. But for those couple issues of Sons of Tomorrow, it actually was in the hands of Tomasi and Gleason as well. So it was a six-part story, and Tomasi and Gleason got to write, you know, all of them. The two issues of Superman, the two issues of Teen Titans, the two issues of Super Sons. And it was so fun. It had an alternate future version of Tim Drake, who was Batman in that future. And then during the course of the story, he becomes a new hero I have a feeling, just based on how fun the story was and the way it was received, we may be seeing more of in his new iteration as the Savior is his name. And he kind of fancies himself as a protector of the time stream. But unlike Booster Gold, who has like the Time Lords behind him saying, okay, this is the definitive history of time and what you need to defend. Tim Drake, the Savior, is kind of taking it upon himself to make those decisions, and he may not always be right. So it introduces a different aspect that can, you know, allow for conflict. So that was really cool. And also the best thing about it was just the way that it explored the relationship between John and Damian. And normally I don't really like Damian, but I like Damian when he's with John. And I liked the way they had each other's back throughout the entire series. And I liked the way that it established the fact that I think Damian's supposed to be like 16 or 17, and John's like 12 or so, almost 13. And I like that dynamic and the way they were establishing a great friendship. And when you think back to the pre-crisis, Batman and Superman, who were best friends, and then you look at these two sons, you know, the son of Batman, the son of Superman, and the way they're bonding as young kids, you can see them growing up to have that super close best friend relationship that the classic pre-crisis Batman and Superman had. So it was so fun. It was so great. It was such an interesting story. And, you know, I love the emotion of it. I love the action of it. I loved that it had this different version of Tim Drake. I love the way that Superman gets to show up at the end and see this relationship that his son is establishing with Damian Wayne. And I think it can only help this Batman and the Superman to get along better. So, man, I hope they collect this story in a trade so that more people can read it. Because, again, it's one of those books where it just finished up maybe a couple weeks ago, and I didn't hear a lot about it when it was happening. The reason I came upon it was because I was getting caught up on Superman this weekend. I was like 4 or 5 issues behind on Superman, and I came to the crossover, and I was like, oh, I didn't even know Superman was crossing over with Super Sons. Okay, let me go read the Super Sons issue. And then I finished the Super Sons issue, and it's like, to be continued in Teen Titans. I'm like, oh, it crosses over to Teen Titans. Okay, I'm behind on that too. Let me go read Teen Titans. And then it went back to Superman, back to Super Sons, back to Teen Titans. And it was so, so, so good. So I definitely recommend it. Super Sons of Tomorrow was a whole heck of a lot of fun. One of the best things I've read recently. And I'm sad to know that Tomasi and Gleason are not going to be on Superman going forward, and the Super Sons series is ending. So remember earlier when I mentioned Bittersweet about Bendis coming on to Superman? He's a great writer. I'm excited to see what he can do. He tells more of a decompressed story. Never been a fan of that. And I've talked before, way back when on the podcast, about the fact, what came first, the chicken or the egg, right? So what came first, the trend toward decompressed storytelling? And then because Bendis tells decompressed stories, his popularity grew? Or was Bendis popular and he told decompressed stories, so decompression of storylines became popular? Like, I'm not sure. It happened, you know, so simultaneously, particularly with Bendis's Ultimate Spider-Man title, which was a runaway hit back in the day. I mean, if you look at the first 6 issues of Ultimate Spider-Man, 6 issues, right? That's basically the story in Amazing Spider-Man number 1. So what Stan Lee and Steve Ditko told in one Silver Age issue, it took Bendis 6 issues to tell. Talk about decompression. And don't get me wrong, it's, you know, bigger panels and better art and fleshing out the character a little more. And I get that. But when people read things like, you know, Ultimate Spider-Man or Walking Dead from issue to issue, and they're finishing it in 5 minutes, this is what we're talking about, you know? There's just not a lot there. It's like, of course people are waiting for the trade, because you need to wait for the trade to get a substantial chunk of story. So, you know, I worry if Bendis is going to do that with Superman stories. But more than that, and I've heard other people say this as well, because it's going to be an entirely new status quo with Superman. If Brian Michael Bendis gets rid of Jonathan Kent, oh, man. I don't even know. There's going to be like riots in the streets, man. I'm telling you, he's a beloved character, and he's been established long enough now. If Bendis like sticks him in a box, or he puts him in an alternate universe, or gets rid of him for any length of time, I'm telling you, man, there's going to be such a backlash. So I'm very curious to see what's going to happen with Bendis on Superman. And that's going to be the number one thing, I think, that most readers of especially the Superman title, because Jonathan Kent's more of a presence in the Superman title rather than the Action Comics title. But I guarantee you that that's going to be something that fans of Jonathan Kent are concerned about, especially considering, you know, Superman, the Superman title itself, starting over with a new number one. Super Sons has been canceled. Oof, people are worried. I'll just say that. People are worried. All right, I think that's going to do it. went a little longer than we normally do, so apologize for that. But hope you guys enjoyed listening to Manny and I talk about a few of the books we've been reading and enjoying lately. Please go to thecomicsourceblog.com for all past episodes of the podcast. We're also in the process of moving everything over to lrmonline.com. We've got all the pages moved over. We're having a little bit of trouble having the actual podcast show up there. So we're trying to work out those technical difficulties. So please be patient with us. But if you do want to go to lrmonline.com and check out all their other content, it's a great place to go to get all kinds of news on movies, TV shows, anything pop culture related, basically. There's tons of articles, tons of content, analysis, reviews, ways to engage with all the talent and writers over there. So very much encourage you to go over and do that. Twitter.com/thecomicsource is where you can find us on Twitter. Also, do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to keep up to date of all our convention coverage, as well as when we drop new episodes. So thanks for listening, everybody, and we'll talk to you next time.